Jose Luis Gabilondo is driving me through the desert in Chihuahua, Mexico, in a little Ford SUV. He's wearing a dress shirt, jeans, boots, and a beige cowboy hat, and his right hand is wrapped up in a bandage because he just lost part of his thumb.
I cut off my finger roping. I got stuck in with the rope and went off. They put it back together, but I wasn't able to fix the whole finger, so I lost like the tip.
It happened during a competition that sounds like a rodeo, but it's not really a rodeo.
I'm a charro, like Mexican charro. It's not like rodeo. It's the same, but it's a little different. You throw the rope into a horse running in front of you, try to get the two legs and stop his runnings.
Charros throw a lasso at the back two legs of a galloping horse, and then they pull on the rope. It's wrapped around the horn of the saddle, and there's so much friction from the horse pulling away that the leather starts smoking. Smoking.
So it's really fast, and I cut my finger into the rope and the saddle. So it got caught there, so went off.
Okay, horses are Jose Luis's hobby. But cows are his business.
Jose Luis is the fifth generation cattle rancher in the Mexican state of Chihuahua. He raises Angus steers, beef cows. His family has 3,000 head of cattle on thousands of acres of land.
They are Mexican cows. They're born in Mexico. But a lot of them have American dads.
Jose Luis buys bull sperm from a ranch in New Mexico.
I like my Angus to be short. And their bellies to be really close to the ground, and you can find that easily in New Mexico. So that's why I like to buy it over there. The quality is just perfect.
His perfect Mexican beef start out in pipettes, little straws filled with potential. Chilled to a perfect negative 70 degrees Celsius.
Every year, when it's time to breed what he refers to as his mama cows, Jose Luis makes a trip to New Mexico. He picks up a cooler full of sperm straws, throws them in the back seat of his pickup truck, takes them across the border, through Mexican customs, south on Highway 45, across the Chihuahua Desert for 3 hours to his ranch, and finally, he inseminates about 100 of his Mexican cows with this American sperm.
They have perfection, and they can tell you this cow is going to produce this, this, and this. It's going to be really good for this, this, and that. And they have the best ones. It's just that.
And for that perfection, he pays about $30 a straw. That $30, it's the first step in a complex, kind of amazing chain of economic events that is the modern beef cow.
A cow today isn't just a thing that happens at a farm. It's not just meat. A cow today is more like an economic system of bets and payoffs.
Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Jason Beaubien.
And I'm Sarah Gonzalez. Jason is with us from the Global Health Desk at NPR.
That's right.
Each year, America buys 500 million pounds of beef from Mexico. And each year, America sells 500 million pounds of beef back to Mexico.
And when we first heard about this, we were like, why? How would it even be worth it to ship all this beef back and forth across borders? Today on the show, we go to the Mexican border to find out.
We follow the journey of a cow in the modern economy. It's a story about mothers and fathers and those little straws. Also, big Wall Street money.
We sample some amazing Mexican food, and it all starts in Jose Luis's cooler.
Support for this program comes from SimpliSafe Home Security. SimpliSafe is completely wireless protection for your home. The company was founded by an electrical engineer whose friends were burglarized. They thought most home security systems at the time were too complicated and too expensive. So he built SimpliSafe. The system can be self-installed in under an hour. And with SimpliSafe, there are no annual contracts. Learn more at simplisafe.com/planetmoney.
Before you can start your day, you like to know what's happening in the news. That's what Up First is for. It's the morning news podcast from NPR, the news you need to take on the day in just about 10 minutes. Listen to Up First on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driving through the open, arid plains where these Mexican cattle will be born and raised. This part of the Chihuahua Desert is incredibly harsh. Everything looks scratchy and seems slightly irritated.
It's like, yeah, like prickly.
Like prickly,
yeah.
Here you cannot have cattle during the winter because there's not enough feed. to feed him, and it's really cold and there's a lot of sand, and most of the time you just see the mesquites in the in sand.
There's a small bush called La Gobernadora, the governor. It kills everything around it.
It has a really good smell. Whenever it rains, when you have that bush around, it smells awesome. That is, I think that's the only thing that I like about it.
The great advantage that Mexican ranchers have in raising calves is that they've got plenty of land.
It might not be the best pasture, but ranchers let these calves live off the country. They don't have to spend money to feed them.
The calves spend the first 6 to 8 months of their lives nursing from their moms and grazing around the governor bushes and cacti, nibbling on wild grasses and the scrubby plants.
Jose Luis doesn't keep these cows. He sells them back to the United States. And there's only one way to get there. These cows have to walk across the border. It's a long, annoying journey for these cows. Lines, security, just like any international border crossing. Your basic nightmare at JFK, but for cattle.
Jose Luis rounds up the cattle, he loads them into a truck, and he drives them to this huge complex of stockyards that's right up against the border fence in Santa Teresa. It's the Chihuahua Cattlemen's Association, and Jose Luis is a member.
There's a big building right there, and cowboys start herding the cattle into this building. The cows walk in single file. USDA agents are inspecting them one by one.
And when those poor, unsuspecting cows walk out of that big building, they fall down a chute and land in a pool of water.
It's a tick bath. That does not happen at JFK.
At least not yet.
The cows scramble to get out of the water, and they shake themselves off like wet puppies. And now they're right at the border, waiting to be traded to the United States.
That's the gate over there. It's open. CBP is there. Just making sure it's just cattle what is crossing.
It's a U.S. Customs and Border Protection agent. And he's sitting there in his white government pickup truck. And he has the keys to let this trade happen. He has the actual keys to the border, to open it up. It slides open like a huge, heavy sliding door.
For a little bit, they're kind of in like no man's land. But then they trot right into the United States, end up in a long, narrow pen that's basically a big scale. It looks like a flatbed truck. And here is where they get sorted and weighed.
This is the sorting chutes right here. They sort the cattle in sizes, 400 pounders, 500 pounders, 600 pounders. And that's how the Mexican cattleman is paid, by the weight. And by the time they go out, it's already on American broker's cattle.
They're American cows now. More cows walk through this gate in the border fence than any other gate on the border.
We just got another permit again for to have this door right here open and closing for 10 more years. We paid off that permit 2 days ago.
Without this opening in the border fence, there might not be as big a ranching industry in Chihuahua, and beef on both sides of the border would probably be more expensive.
Cattle and beef currently move across North America without any tariffs or quotas. The same used to be true for hogs, but pigs got caught up in the recent spat between the U.S. and Mexico over steel tariffs, and Mexico put a 20% duty on American pork. But at least for now, the cattle industry has managed to stay out of the trade war.
Jose Luis sells each of his for about $800, which is interesting because anyone will tell you these cows will be worth a lot more in just a few months.
The reason these cows make the journey to the United States is because of decisions made in Washington and New York by bankers. Feeding cows corn and alfalfa and wheat until they're ready to be slaughtered is expensive. Ranchers usually have to borrow money to feed their cows. And it's just cheaper to borrow money in the U.S.
The finance in Mexico, it's not as cheap as what it is in the U.S. They do lend money, but it's at a very high interest rate. So you can't really compete with that.
This is William Wallace. He's a fourth-generation cattle rancher from Chihuahua. Everyone calls him Bilito.
If you had to borrow money to buy corn to fatten your animals
right now,
on this side?
Right now in the U.S., probably the highest would be probably 7%. And in Mexico, up to a 25%.
Interest rate.
Interest rate. So that's, I mean, it's a big difference. Big difference.
Those dramatically lower interest rates are part of why more than 1 million cows cross the border each year.
Advantages like that get talked about all the time by economists. Comparative advantage is one of the first things you learn about in economics class. America could raise calves on vast chunks of land, or it could do other, more profitable things with that land.
Mexico has land, and of all the things they can choose to do with it, raising calves is a relatively good option. That's comparative advantage, and that's why they shuttle these giant animals across the border.
Some of the cattle coming across from Mexico are sold directly to American ranchers or brokers. Others go up for sale at auction right next to the stockyards on the U.S. side.
309 on these men, 309. And $200 here.
The Senate race auction house has all three flags, the Mexican flag, the American flag, the New Mexico flag up on the wall. And auctioneer Jack Blanford, he's trying to drive up the price on a batch of cows that are fairly small compared to the others. And Blanford is joking that they're so compact you can drive them home in the cab of your pickup truck. He starts the bidding at $2 a pound. It inches up to $2.07. And then Blanford declares they're sold.
43 on 30. Buys another nice set.
As they scramble out of the auction hall, the animals are loaded into trucks and head to ranches all over the U.S.
Alvaro Bustillos, the owner of Vaquero Trading, says a lot of the cows from Mexico go to the Texas Panhandle, Colorado, California.
A lot of small cattle is going right now to Oklahoma.
Whenever you get a million of anything moving around, high finance shows up with their wares. And Alvaro is Wall Street's agent right down here on the border. But he doesn't like to call himself a cattle broker. The way he describes it, he does a lot more than just buy and sell cows.
We facilitate the trade between a Mexican producer and an industrialized U.S. buyer, which could be anywhere from a cattle feeder all the way to a rancher, farmer. Even we sell, I sell cattle to private equities, funds, which mainly sometimes buy the cattle for their portfolios.
Portfolios, private equity, basically just big pools of investor money.
Cows aren't just cows to Wall Street. They're a stable commodity, something worth buying and selling. To Wall Street, a cow is a series of costs and opportunities to sell. The cost to buy it, the cost to feed it, the price it sells for.
Wall Street makes all kinds of options and contracts and deals available to the cattle ranchers.
They'll buy the cattle from me, the live cattle.
Okay.
And then they'll sell the contract for that specific month where it's going to get slaughtered, okay? And then they have to pencil in the input of to feed that steer, which would be the future of the corn. That's a break even. And you can even call it a crush, where you buy the live cattle, sell the fat future, and buy the corn.
A crush, of course. You got to love trade jargon.
The crush is the way you describe a three-way bet.
They take bets on the cost of the cow without really dealing with a real cow. Bets on the cost to feed the cow, the cost of the meat, and if the price of the meat ends up higher than the cost to feed the cow, you get rich.
They probably aren't going to get really rich.
Without touching any cows.
But so like in this futures market, right, people are buying and selling cattle that they have never even seen yet, right? And but I'm trying to get an understanding of what you do. You make sure that in that real cow shows up eventually, right? Or that steer.
That's what we do. Like, what we do is we buy cattle from all these producers, put them all together, and then standardize them. We sort them into sizes and qualities. There's always a market for everything.
Last year, Alvaro helped farmers and big beef companies and New York traders buy more than 150,000 head of cattle from Mexico. Because at the end of all that wheeling and dealing, like, a real cow actually has to show up.
On American farms and feedlots, that cow grows in weight and value. In less than a year, a 400-pound calf can grow to 1,400 pounds, $1,600 worth of cow.
Add up the cost of the cow and the feed and subtract it from the sale price, crushed it. Maybe. I don't know.
Then they get turned into beef. They get slaughtered. That's just what happens. Okay, to recap, we had a $30 straw of sperm going from the U.S. down to Mexico.
When the calf crossed the border into the U.S., it sold for $800.
The U.S. farmer got $1,600 when he sold the cow to the slaughterhouse.
And then the final retail value of that boxed meat when it leaves the slaughterhouse, it is $3,500.
But remember, the same amount of beef going into the U.S. is also going out. And this is the part that really surprised me. A lot of that meat will go back to Mexico again.
A third crossing.
Daryl Peel, an ag economist at Oklahoma State University, says that when a cow is slaughtered, it produces hundreds of different products, from hamburger to tongue to filet mignon. And he looks at this like a distributor would, someone who has to get a lot of different things out to a lot of different places.
And there's an opportunity to make more money off some of those beef products, depending on where you sell them.
There's no reason to assume in any country that consumer preferences are going to exactly match the mix of products that you're going to get every time you process one of these animals.
It used to be that a butcher would get a carcass and cut the meat up right there. Now the meat is boxed at a slaughterhouse. The ribeyes go to some customers. Some of Jose Luis's cows might end up at a steakhouse in Japan. And the shank might go to Mexico City.
There's a natural opportunity to add value if you can adjust the flows of those products and move some products offshore to an export market.
Beef round, for instance, the cut of meat from the rump of the animal, can have one value in Mexico and a completely different value in the U.S.
If you take round in the U.S., the big part of the round, it's very lean. It's not something that we would typically make steaks out of, for example. It gets used in other ways. In Mexico, that round is referred to as milanesa, which is a specific dish, but it's also referred to as the cut. Very popular. So you add value when you ship that there.
Tongue, liver, cow bones, they're headed to Mexico.
I went down to Juarez to have lunch with Erica De La O at the El Chaparral restaurant. She's telling me about her favorite Mexican delicacies.
The head of the cow, you put it to boil, and you get the cheeks for barbacoa, you get the eyeballs for special gourmet tacos, you get the brains. The brains, they're tasty.
Erica works for the state of New Mexico as a kind of trade representative. She grew up in Chihuahua, she's married to a rancher, and she appears to know everybody on both sides of the border. She also knows where to find good fried tripe in Juarez. She says nothing in Mexico gets wasted.
You get the tongue. There's also a dish with the oxtail. So everything that they use, the cow is utilized 100%.
The waiter just delivered an order of tuétanos.
I love tuétanos.
It's chunks of blackened cow bones, and they're piled up on the plate, and they're still unbelievably hot as if they've just come out of the fire. And you eat the tuétanos by scooping the bone marrow out onto a tortilla. You spritz it with a little bit of lime, a bit of salt, some chopped onion.
Oh my God, tuétanos are the best. I love tuétanos. You have to use like a whole bunch of lime, otherwise it's kind of weird. And I eat tuétanos in the United States. I can go into a grocery store and get them. But they don't say where the cows came from.
Right.
Because the United States acknowledges that even cows that are born in Mexico are kind of half American. It's a product of both places, like me.
And this is something that Jose Luis, when we were in Chihuahua, he was talking to me about constantly.
Okay, yeah, it was born in Mexico, but who built it? Who built most of that meat? Almost two-thirds of that steer, it was built in the United States with American corn, American alfalfa, American everything.
He says the U.S. and Mexico beef industries are so intertwined now that it's just sort of one industry selling steaks and tuétanos to whoever wants them.
Jose Luis is worried, however, that something could happen to disrupt this Mexican-American beef business, a trade war, some new set of tariffs, or possibly shutting down of the import-export facilities.
But as long as Mexican ranchers' best option is to raise calves...
And U.S. traders' best option is to grow and slaughter them...
The cows are gonna keep walking through the border.
Support for NPR and the following message come from the Business Platinum Card from American Express. Platinum enhances life's moments, both big and small, so that you can do business to the fullest. Don't do business without it.
Every day, business is at war. Blue chips versus disruptors. American giants versus Chinese competition. Founders against corporate raiders. Sometimes the prize is your wallet. Sometimes it's your attention. And sometimes it's just the fun of beating the other guy. There's a new podcast from Wondery about all these battles called Business Wars. It's hosted by David Brown, former anchor at Marketplace. Nike versus Adidas. Netflix against HBO. Nintendo versus Sony. They get real. They get personal. They mean business. Subscribe to Business Wars on Apple Podcasts or visit businesswars.fm/money.
Let us know what you thought of the show. You can hit us up at planetmoney@npr.org. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at Planet Money.
A big thanks to William Matisse at the New Mexico Border Authority. Also to David Cooper at Progressive Cattleman Magazine and Professor David Anderson at Texas A&M. Alex Goldmark is our supervising producer. Brian Erdstadt is our editor. And this episode was produced by Darian Woods.
He's a vegetarian. Sorry, Darian.
Yeah, sorry, Darian.
I'm Sarah Gonzalez.
And I'm Jason Beaubien. Thanks for listening.
Hello, thank you for choosing Wendy's. Would you like to try sauce and bacon classic?
So, well, like, what is your best burger? What's your best burger?
Oh, I can't choose. They're all delicious. But the Baconator gets ordered the most.
All right, well, I'll try that one.